Earth Eats is a production of WFIU and Indiana Public Media.
Welcome to Earth Eats, a show of real food and green living. I'm Annie Corrigan.
Most, if not all, the customers that walk in that don't have experience, what they expect is meat is very sweet, syrupy almost.
But Woody Drake of Brothers Drake Meadery in Columbus, Ohio, prides himself on crushing that stereotype of mead. I visit with him in the store and taste some fruity, floral, and spicy honey wines. Before that, Patrick Scahill of WNPR in Connecticut visits a beekeeper to get some hands-on experience. Then, a day of cooking with the color green in Chef Daniel Orr's kitchen. He harvests some mint, tomatillos, and cucumbers from his garden for three seasonal recipes. That's all coming up on Earth Eats. Hello to Mia Partlow, who brings us the news headlines. What do you have for us today?
Annie, I've got four stories today. The USDA accidentally published an internal newsletter on its website this week that encouraged its employees to participate in Meatless Mondays. The newsletter highlighted the environmental impact of producing meat, stating that it's a major source of greenhouse gases. And according to the memo, it also wastes resources, since it takes 7,000 kilograms of grain to make 1,000 kilograms of beef. The National Cattlemen's Beef Association was the first organization to get wind of the announcement. A spokesperson for the organization called it a slap in the face to cattle and dairy farmers. Among the several people taking to Twitter to voice their disapproval were two politicians from Iowa. Senator Chuck Grassley said he will be eating more meat to compensate for the USDA announcement. And Representative Steve King tweeted, quote, "I will have the double ribeye Mondays instead," unquote. The USDA backtracked quickly, removing the message on Tuesday afternoon and tweeting a retraction. Meatless Monday was introduced in 2003 as a grassroots public health awareness campaign. New York City continues to make headlines in the food world. The city's proposed ban on oversized containers of sugary drinks received its first and only public hearing on Tuesday. Supporters and detractors started gathering around the Board of Health building an hour ahead of time. The hearing was expected to take 2 hours, but due to the dozens of people wanting to express their views, it lasted much longer. The Board of Health will decide the proposal's fate later this year. And 4 years ago, the New York Board of Health passed another widely publicized ban, the one on trans fats in fast food. A study released this month by the New York City Department of Health and Mental Hygiene has shown improvement in citizens' eating habits as a result of the ban. New Yorkers reduce their consumption of trans fat in a typical lunch by 2.4 grams. And this summer's drought is having an effect on food banks across the Midwest. Hoosier Hills Food Bank Director Julio Alonso says this year they've had a hard time getting small, local farmers to commit to donations of fresh foods. While a small percentage of the food bank's food comes from direct farmer donations, he says their produce is some of the best quality they get. The rest of us will likely see an increase in our grocery bills thanks to the drought. The USDA anticipates food prices rising between 2.5 and 3.5% in 2012 and another 3 to 4% in 2013. Read more about these stories on our website, where you can join the conversation. Do you participate in Meatless Mondays? What do you think about a soda ban? And tell us if you've experienced an increase in your weekly grocery bill. Find us at eartheats.org.
And visit us on Twitter and Facebook for foodie news updates throughout the week. Mia Partlow reads our news headlines. Always a pleasure.
See you next week.
Honeybees help produce nearly one-third of the food we consume every day, and beekeepers dedicate their lives to protecting this unsung hero of American agriculture. WNPR's Patrick Scahill visited with a local beekeeper to learn about the craft.
Here's the thing about beekeeping. Eventually, you're going to get stung.
Yep, and there's one in the mouth.
Okay, that hurt. Beekeepers call that earning your stripes.
Up the nose is the worst single place to be stung. There is no place worse than up the nose. And I mean no place. You know, pick an area on the body, let your mind go wild. Up the nose is still the worst.
That's Andrew Cote.
We're about done here.
And that's him getting stung up the nose. Cote is intense, and he's super passionate about beekeeping. As the head of Bees Without Borders, he's traveled around the world with his father, Norman, teaching poor farming communities the economic benefits of bees.
We've been to many, many places. Moldova, Ukraine, Iraq, Zimbabwe.
The group also works locally, maintaining hives that pollinate community gardens in poor neighborhoods. Kote and his father oversee about 240 hives, including a number in front of his home in Norwalk. Outside Kote's house, cars drive past, and some of them stop to gawk as he holds up a frame filled with honey and thousands of bees to the sun. Kote is careful with his bees, and he says he learned a few tricks from his father, like cutting up burlap, which he puts in his smoker and always keeps burning. He keeps the bees away, and he loves the smell.
My father always used to come into the house smelling like that. I find it comforting, and you know, his truck in the driveway, you could really smell it.
Inside the hive, 60,000 worker bees incubate eggs and make honeycomb. Most are female.
They just work until they die. They literally work their wings off.
But a few are male drones, who live for one purpose, to mate with the queen. But they can only do it once.
They won't be able to do it twice. Their apparatus is left behind. Their heart. And with mixed emotions, they fall to the ground. Dead. Dead before they hit the ground. They'd probably do it even if they knew that's what was going to happen. Wouldn't you? I mean,
at her peak, a queen can lay around 2,000 eggs per day. And as the queen lays more eggs, a hive can run out of room. That's when bees swarm, abandoning their home in search of a bigger place to live. Often that bigger place ends up being a tree in someone's backyard. Kote says he loves getting those calls.
An ideal swarm would be on a low-hanging branch. And you would just put a bucket or a box underneath that branch and shake it. If the queen is in there, her scent will indicate to the other bees where to go. The other bees will follow. Close the contraption, and you've got your free bees.
You can also find Kote selling his bee products at farmers markets, but to him, the honey's not about the money.
Around here, I would really say the only way to make a small fortune in beekeeping is to begin with a large fortune, and you just whittle it down. It's really a losing proposition. I mean, if you hate money, you should probably jump into any kind of agricultural pursuit.
Even so, I still wondered if I had what it took to be a beekeeper.
Like, that's a wasp now crawling up your white shirt. Yeah. Not a bee.
And they're aggressive, right?
Well, she can sting.
Yeah.
Over and over.
Okay.
Now, waving your hands like
yeah.
that.
Is freaking out is not going to help.
No, it's not helping.
There are folks in Columbus, Ohio, who are especially invested in the health of honeybees to make their business run. They make mead, which is fermented honey and water. Heads up, wine lovers, they're hoping to convert you. Brothers Drake Meadery has been providing honey wine to Central Ohio since 2008. Their philosophy is to use local ingredients and to sell to local people. So don't ask them to ship mead anywhere outside of the city of Columbus, because they just won't do it.
Welcome to our meadery.
Thanks, I'm happy to be here.
I stopped by the meadery near downtown and spoke with Oren Benari, the general manager, who is pouring us some samples, and the man responsible for crafting the tasty beverages.
My name is Woody Drake, and I make mead.
So you are one of the brothers Drake?
I am. I'm the good-looking one.
Where's the other one?
He's at work. He's got a day job, the poor guy.
There are five different types of mead made at Brothers Drake. Your basic variety is made with only honey, water, and yeast. For metheglin, you add spices. Melomel is where you add fruits. A combination mead is a metheglin-melomel hybrid, where you add spices and fruit. And finally, a cider is where they use apple cider instead of water. The first mead they poured was an example of a melomel, their Testarossa.
This is a dry red raspberry mead made with wildflower honey. This is one of the first meads that we ever made professionally, these many years ago. This one is real dry, and I think that's an important thing to point out. Most, if not all, the customers that walk in that don't have experience, what they expect is mead is very sweet, syrupy almost, typically because that's their experience.
That's really tasty. I love that. So if you could pair that with some food, what do you think?
This Testarossa goes very well with spicy food. It cuts down on the spice, and it just creates a really nice flavor, a really nice pairing.
Talk about the process of making mead.
Okay, that's a good. I'm glad you brought that up. First off, we categorically refuse to use sulfites. cannot, shall not, have not, will not, period. Sulfites are very damaging to mead, and they're not necessary. Honey is naturally antibiotic, whereas grape juice is very naturally probiotic. So you don't need it to stop wild yeast, so we don't use it. And I hate to, I really don't like to talk, I won't put any specifics, but when you open a bottle of mead that has sulfites in it, it will smell like burning sulfur. Like you remember in eighth grade, you burnt sulfur, smelled like a fart, right? That's not what I'm looking for.
Of course
when
not.
I open my bottles, that's not what I'm looking for. And in the grape wine production, and I'm nobody's grape wine manufacturer, but in the grape wine production, as I understand it, there's a lot more opportunity for that sulfur to come out. In our case, not so much. We don't have open tanks. Everything is closed, so it stays, and it ends up having a sulfurous aroma, which I find offensive.
Where does the honey come in the making process?
Honey starts in the very beginning. We start with local wildflower honey that we get from, there's a one person who's kind of our honey broker, because he knows all the people and he speaks beekeeper very well. The reasons we choose him, first off, his honey is astounding, just absolutely astounding. And second off, he's believes like we do in a low use of chemistry, and I mean, the way he talks about his bees is the way most people talk about their kids. You know, that's a good sign. He's a craftsman, and that means a lot to a person like me who's also a craftsman.
You say you use wildflower honey?
We do.
Could you use other types of honey to get different flavors in your mead?
Absolutely, and that's a good thing to point out. There is actually more variety in mead potential than there is in any other alcoholic beverage, simply for that reason. Every honey is different. If you put a hive in your backyard, the honey this year will be different than the honey next year due to the will of God. This many daffodils, that many tulips, and the proportions change every year. Now, in Ohio, the best variety really for fermenting is black locust. Every 3 or 4 years, we'll get a good black locust harvest, and that's just melt-in-your-mouth kind of, oh, my God.
All right, so what's this one?
This is a mead called VO. This one, now we're moving more into the semi-sweet of our meads.
So it's vanilla beans and orange peel.
Absolutely. It's fermented with rooibos tea as well to give it a little bit of extra punch.
That
color.
That's mead. That's what I know as mead. You're right, it's a lot sweeter, and it has a fuller mouthfeel to it.
Mm-hmm.
So this next one is going to, it's apple pie. Is this going to taste like apple pie?
Well, yeah. You taste it and you tell us.
Oh, boy. Okay.
How about that?
A little bit. I taste the spiciness is the main thing that I get out of that.
The best apples in Ohio come out right around Halloween. So right at that time every year we go get cider. There's no water in this recipe at all. It's just cider, pure cider. And it goes from being apples to fermenting within hours. And we bring it here, and we add honey to fortify it, and then cinnamon, nutmeg, and cloves to make it apple pie-like. And it takes a full year. Typically, it comes out middle of September-ish. And so that is a gorgeous sweet mead, and it's astounding how fast it sells.
Well, it's really tasty. In fact, I'm going to have another sip.
Good,
I love it. This is great.
Yeah, it's tasty, huh?
You're a local business, serving
Absolutely.
Local people, using
Absolutely.
Local ingredients.
Absolutely.
Is it easy in Columbus to do that? Hard to do it? What are the joys? What are the challenges?
Well, nothing valuable is easy. Nothing worthwhile. Nothing. So, no, it's not easy. We get calls fairly regularly from people who want us to mail it to them or whatever, and sometimes it's hard for them to understand our philosophy. But it's just wasteful. It's wasteful to send things unnecessarily, and there's lots of market here in Columbus.
In addition to that, some people ask us, well, what about growth? And to us, it's not only about becoming more profitable. Every time we buy honey locally, we're supporting the local economy. We're keeping our money where we live, where we eat, where we go to school, where we are. Every time we sell locally, it is people from our community that are buying from us. So again, we're keeping the money here. That doesn't mean that we're not going to open another meadery in another city, if there's enough demand, and once we plan on it, where we will buy local from that city, we will employ local people, and we will sell local.
The idea being that down the road, when we're gray-bearded old men, we will have created a local business that can operate nationwide. If there's demand for it, if there's demand in Austin, Texas, well, then you go to Texas and you get sagebrush honey and you get their wildflower honeys and things like that, you know. And if there's demand in San Francisco, you go there and you get avocado honey and orange blossom honey, and maybe you make jasmine mead because there's jasmine all over that town and they love it. You know, it's what they like is what matters.
Thanks to Woody Drake and Oren Benari of Brothers Drake Meadery in Columbus, Ohio. Looking on their website, it says, quote, "To us, local is not just a buzzword. It's our guiding principle," unquote. So you won't be able to enjoy their mead outside the Columbus, Ohio area, but you can connect with them on their website at brothersdrake.com. To the kitchen now. We use honey in so many recipes here at Earth Eats, it was really difficult to choose just one for today. But I'm being selfish, and I'm picking my favorite recipe. It's honey paired with beets and orange for a tasty vinaigrette dressing.
Well, you know, a lot of people don't like beets because they say they taste like dirt. And they do have a very earthy flavor. It's just important that you do clean them off really well. We're going to rinse them under cold water. We're going to trim off the tops. Now, the tops are just as good as the roots, so don't throw those away. A lot of people tend to just discard the tops of the beets, but they're great sautéed. Heat up your pan, add a little bit of garlic to it, let it start to turn nutty and brown. Quickly add your greens, a little bit of water, and that will help them steam. And within a minute or two, you have a really nice beet greens dish. Now, I'd say we've got a half cup of beets. We're going to add the juice of one orange, a little bit of orange zest as well. Okay, we're going to add some olive oil. 2 cloves of garlic, and just a little bit of water, about a quarter cup of water. And for our acid, we're going to use a little vinegar. I'm going to use some of my homemade wild garlic vinegar, but you could use some cider vinegar would be fine, or just white vinegar. I'm going to just put the blender on.
You're a very daring man to wear a white shirt while working with beets.
Now you see, it has a nice thick viscosity to it. Tell me what you think.
Love it.
Yeah, and this is also great with goat cheese. So you could do a salad with goat cheese and then put a little bit of this sprinkled on top, drizzled on top, and have a wonderful dressing. You can use it for all kinds of things.
It is really the most versatile condiment we've made, I'm pretty sure. It's been used as a dipping sauce for our squash tempura. It's a nice ketchup substitute on our garden burger. And thanks to its bright purple color, it looks great drizzled on a plate. Get this recipe and plenty of others on our website, eartheats.org. Coming up...
So they have this kind of papery husk on the outside, and you just kind of tear that off, and there you go, it's the tomatillo.
That's the sound of the freshest food you can get. Chef Daniel Orr has harvested several tomatillos to use in our roasted salsa verde recipe. 2 additional greenish dishes are on the docket for the second half of our show. Stay with us.
You're my honey.
Production support for Earth Eats comes from Blooming Foods, fresh local organic food with delis at all 3 locations and a garden center on East 3rd Street, bloomingfoods.coop, and Touchstone Wellness, providers of therapeutic massage and yoga instruction, offering a variety of healing massage styles and yoga levels at the corner of Buick Cadillac Boulevard and Auto Mall Road, 1 block east of College Mall Road. Touchstone Wellness Massage and Yoga, 812-337-3529 or 33RELAX.
It's not easy being green, having to spend each day the color of the leaves, when I think it could be nicer being red or yellow or gold, or something much more colorful like that.
Welcome back to Earth Eats. I'm Annie Corrigan. A julep
is typically thought to be a sweet drink, particularly one used as a vessel for getting down medicine. No medicine in sight for this drink recipe, though. Chef Daniel Orr is using some fresh mint leaves to make a frozen mint julep, perfect for a hot summer evening on the porch, and a perfect way to start off our trio of recipes featuring the color green.
Got some great mint out of the garden, and we're going to take off most of the stem. And what we want is that real nice green color. It's going to be a real bright, vibrant kind of chartreuse color.
And again, you grow many, many types of mint. What kind of mint in particular?
Spearmint would be great for this. Peppermint. This is the apple mint. Okay, then I've made some simple syrup, and we've done syrups before on Earth Eats. Equal parts sugar and water. We're going to add, for two people, we'll add about a third of a cup. We're going to put about an equal part of bourbon. Now, you don't want to use your really good bourbon because the mint's going to cover up all the subtleties of the aging process and the barrel aging and all that. So not exactly rot gut, but one step above. And now we're going to put a squeeze of a lime in there. And really, you want to squeeze it out, get all that juice and get that pith in there. And then one thing that I like to do is to go ahead and just cut off a little bit of that lime zest and throw that in there. And it's going to be a little bit chunky when we puree it with the ice cubes, but it tastes so good to bite into those little pieces of zest. We've got all of our ingredients there. We're going to top it off with some ice, put it on the machine, and here we go.
Now all we need is a very large, beautiful Sunday church straw hat.
Some flowers tucked in it. There you go. I think it'd look better on you than me, though. Here you go. Have a sip
all right.
And let me know what you think.
Cheers.
Cheers.
That's the most refreshing drink that I could imagine having on a hot, hot day as I'm outside.
One in julep, who was the cause of it all?
Now we're going to make a roasted salsa using ground cherries, better known as tomatillos. We picked some tomatillos straight from the garden for this recipe.
And they look kind of like Japanese lanterns here, you know?
They really do.
So they have this kind of papery husk on the outside, and you just kind of tear that off, and there you go. It's a tomatillo. Taste this. It's almost like a fruit. I mean,
but it's still fairly mild.
Yeah, a citrusy melon. And we've got several different varieties. Some of them kind of blush purple when they're really ripe, and they turn very light colored. And those are super sweet. So let's go in the kitchen and get these roasted up. Tomatillos sometimes have kind of a sticky residue on the outside of them. So just want to give that a rinse. I'm going to chop up some onions. Okay, I'm going to add my chili pepper. We're going to put a little lemon zest in this one. 4 or 5 cloves of garlic. And I'm going to toss that with just a couple tablespoons of olive oil. And what we're going to do different about this salsa is it's not going to be a raw salsa. We're going to roast these vegetables off, get them a little caramelized. And that's also going to evaporate some of the moisture in the onions and the tomatillos, which will make the sauce a little bit thicker and give it great flavor. So now it's got nice and caramelized. You can kind of see that it's cooked down a little bit. And we're going to take this and put it in the food processor. So I've got probably about a cup of basil here. I'm going to add another toe of raw garlic. And we're going to pulse this. That's pretty good. I'm going to add a little bit of lemon juice to it.
At this point, you can add some raw vegetables to give the salsa a nice crunch. Chef Orr has a great recipe for jazzing up store-bought salsa with fresh herbs from the garden. That's on our website. And since we are talking about all things green, check out two recipes for guacamole. A traditional recipe using avocados, and then a vegan guac with sweet peas and tofu. Jumpstart your creativity at eartheats.org. The farmer's market is full of cucumbers these days. Enjoy them raw with some hummus or in a salad. Perhaps you're pickling cucumbers to enjoy months down the road. Here's a recipe idea that uses plenty of cucumbers if you still have some leftovers in that crisper. No tomatoes necessary for our green gazpacho.
Even back in the old days in the old country in Spain, they made green gazpacho, sometimes even with almonds and grapes. So there are a lot of, there have always been lots of different flavors of gazpacho. Today we're doing a green gazpacho, and we're going to start by tossing in a bunch of green stuff.
All right.
So we've got some onion tops. You could use scallions, but we're using everything that we can out of the garden. So we're going to add some of those.
Some stuff that you would probably normally throw away.
Yeah, a lot of people would. Not me. I don't throw anything away.
No, of course not.
I'm a Scotsman. Learned that from my dad. All right, and then we're going to add our cucumbers. We have about 6 cucumbers.
This is great because I have so many cucumbers right now. I'm choking on cucumbers.
This time of year, this is the best time to use them up. I use cucumbers I run through my juicer with some lime juice and mint and make a really nice cucumber lemonade. All right, and to this we're going to add our yogurt. We've got some garlic. Just slice that up to help the blender puree it. A little bit of olive oil, another about a quarter cup. We've got a little ginger.
Ginger and garlic, two flavors that you add to a lot of your recipes.
It
adds a nice little ping.
It does. And then we're going to add some herbs. I've got some of that nice little micro basil. And we've got some mint. Mint and cucumbers really are a nice marriage.
Green, green, and more green.
And more green. We're going to add also a little bit of my Don't Let Your Man Go hot sauce. Gives it that little kick.
And that's got a little bit of a sweet taste
to
it, right?
Yeah. Okay, and we'll just put that on go. Maybe just a touch more salt. And then a fun thing to do with a gazpacho is to serve it in a big bowl, and then you can surround it with all of your different garnishes. So we've got some cucumbers, got some red peppers, got some fresh herbs. You could also do some kernels of corn. You could use the little grape cherry tomatoes or the currant tomatoes. You could put a little bowl of crab meat out if people wanted some crab meat or some diced shrimp. Just give it a little final taste. Really, really good. Great way to get your veggies.
Visit our website to find the recipes for all three of these green creations. Looking through our archives, we have a recipe for peach mojitos and peach muffins for your fruit lovers out there, and watermelon rye sorbet for a sweet treat. Check us out and submit your recipes all at eartheats.org. Thanks to everyone who helps make Earth Eats possible. Oren Benari, Woody Drake, Chef Daniel Orr, Mia Partlow, Patrick Scahill, and all the folks of Harvest Public Media. A big shout out to our carriage stations across the country, WRVO and Geneva Community Radio in New York, WHFC in Maryland, and WFIU and WBOI in Indiana. Send us a note to let us know what local and sustainable food stories are happening in your neck of the woods. Our email address is eartheats@gmail.com.
Production support for Earth Eats comes from Blooming Foods. Fresh, local, organic food with delis at all three locations and a garden center on East 3rd Street. Bloomingfoods.coop. And Touchstone Wellness, providers of therapeutic massage and yoga instruction, offering a variety of healing massage styles and yoga levels at the corner of Buick Cadillac Boulevard and Auto Mall Road, one block east of College Mall Road. Touchstone Wellness, massage and yoga. More at touchstonewellness.com. Earth Eats is a production of WFIU and Indiana Public Media. Carrie Boyce, executive producer.
Next week, it's off to the state fair to check out what they're deep frying this year. Leave your diet at the door for this episode of Earth Eats. Thanks for listening. I'm Annie Corrigan.